about you?
Good evening.
Good evening.
Please join me in saying the Anabakoa. Anabakoa.
This is the potential. This
is the potential that we can all achieve this month. The 8th verse we say in a whisper. We're reading a verse from the Zohar, from the 5th section, which is titled, Hashem Rebuke You, O Adversary. Tonight's class is the 15th class in the Advanced Carnation series. And the way to get to the handout is very simple. And that's to go to the Revealed Wisdom section of the Yeshem website. And you get there by going to www.yeshem.com. and going to click on the link in the red bar that says Revealed Wisdom. And that will take you to a page that you scroll down towards the bottom, and you'll see a whole matrix of different classes. The second column from the left is our advanced classes, although the third and fourth columns are also advanced classes. The first column on the left is the basic class. The ninth class of the basic class is reincarnation. And right next to that class, essentially the ninth row of the matrix, is our advanced reincarnation series. If you click on that, it gets open to a page that is being reviewed and being fixed. But it starts right now with class 13 of the advanced reincarnation class. As we have time, we'll have all of the classes available there. But if you scroll down through class 13 and class 14, and then finally to class 15, you will see the handout for tonight titled Advanced Reincarnation Class 15, handout number 10. And you'll also see a class for the recording with a statement above it saying that we haven't yet made the recording because we're teaching the class tonight. But please open up the handout and follow along. You're going to find some very interesting reading from this handout, although not all of it will be handled in the same day. We will probably take three, maybe even four classes to cover what's in this handout. Oh, I'm seeing that the title says Advanced Reincarnation Class 13, and I will have to change that to 15. And as we know from our previous classes, we are reading from the translation of the Sharei Gilgulim that was translated by Shabtai Teicher, Rabbi Shabtai Teicher, and appears in the Kabbalah Online website. This class is going to start out with a different aspect, and it's the section that starts Reincarnation of Bilam and Others. This week is the Parasha of Balak. The other nation prophet, Bilam, makes a significant contribution both to the story and to the essence of the Parasha. Since many people have not read the email from this week yet, and many people who might be hearing the recording do not get the emails, I'm sure that even if you've read it, this will reinforce the teachings for you and help to break the klipot that are keeping you from realizing all aspects of this wisdom. But I've included the section that's in the email this week, but I have added some commentary, and I think you'll find that it's well worth spending the time going over this if you have already read it. The Ari teaches in his Sharei Gugulim, Gates of Reincarnation, the following. It is difficult to understand the request to die the death of the righteous when Bilam was killed according to the Midrash in a duel of people who had the knowledge of mind over matter and followed Bilam by flying after him like a bird, not like an airplane. This kind of death cannot be considered a death of the righteous, even though it is a miracle unto itself. The Midrash teaches, the Zohar teaches, that Bilam was flying when Pinchas and his cohorts arrived at the same location and spotted him. The Zohar tells us that Bilam's death was a death of impurity. When Pinchas killed Bilam, he used a sword that had on it the image of a snake, a symbol of idol worship, to ensure that Bilam did not die the death of the righteous. So why would Bilam, speaking with words the Creator put in his mouth, ask to die the death of the righteous, and then not die the death of the righteous? If you read the email, it provides you the verse where this is said and leads into this section, but I didn't think the additional words were necessary, even though they were Torah, because I think the purpose of reincarnation is to understand many different levels. The Ari explains that Bilam did not die the death of the righteous in this incarnation as Bilam. Yet he eventually dies the death of the righteous in another incarnation. The Ari explains the chain of souls related to Bilam as follows. The Ari himself says that the fact that Bilam can be reincarnated into inanimate objects can be seen with the soul of Bilam. The fact that people can be reincarnated into inanimate objects can be seen with the soul of Bilam. The soul of Bilam was first incarnated as Lavan HaArami, the father-in-law of Jacob, who was a negative person. Next came the incarnation as Bilam the prophet, who had the power to curse the Israelites. I should make a comment. I didn't put it in writing, but I think it's important that people begin to understand. When a soul falls into the depths of the Klipot, the Klipot does not let them out to reincarnate until they feel the Klipot, the system, the negative system, feels that this soul has been turned, that it is going to do negative things, that it is connected and controlled by the negative system. So in the first incarnation of a high soul that has fallen into the Klipot, they are going to be negative. And that was the case with Lavan. Next came the incarnation as Bilam, the prophet, who had the power to curse the Israelites. Then the Ari explains Bilam's soul was reincarnated as a rock because Bilam had used his mouth negatively, and as a stone he could not speak. As a stone he could contemplate the why of this incarnation. The soul of Bilam's next incarnation after that was as Nabal HaKarmeli, a wealthy man who lived at the time of King David. And in this incarnation, Bilam's soul was given an opportunity to complete its tikkun, or correction, in this case, of evil speech. According to the Book of Prophets, King David, seemingly out of the blue, sent a group of soldiers to Nabal HaKarmeli with a request. King David said, "Tell Nabal that when his people were traveling with their herds, I and my soldiers protected him. And because of this protection, I now ask that Nabal provide us with food and drink so we can sustain ourselves." The Ari reminds us that there were many other people of whom King David could have made this request, but he sent his messengers to Nabal. What did Nabal do once he received King David's request? Nabal denied his request. Although he knew King David, he said, "Who is David? Who is the son of Ishai? There is no way I'm going to help him." Abigail, Nabal's wife, overheard this conversation and realized that her husband was making a terrible mistake. Without telling him, she ran after the soldiers and stopped them, giving them food and drink, and promising more to King David. But she was too late. Shortly after denying King David's request, Nabal died. According to the phrase in the Book of Prophets, his heart died within him. The Ari explains that Nabal was an elevated soul whose tikkun process had begun much earlier. First in his soul's incarnation as Laban, and then as Bilam. When Pinchas killed Bilam, he was actually assisting in the correction of Bilam's soul. The Ari says that Bilam was then reincarnated into a stone, which could not speak. Actually, before I read that verse, let me make this comment. For us to begin to realize how much we don't see. When Pinchas killed Bilam, he was actually assisting in the correction of Bilam's soul. What is hinted at here is that every one of the four deaths that people undergo for their particular chets, their particular sins, that they may have occurred, have caused or done in the world, and then they find that they end up dying one of these four deaths. These four deaths are helping them in their tikkun process through the cleansing of whatever negative action they did. We wouldn't think of it in terms of somebody who murders somebody else is helping them in their tikkun. But this is how we need to start to see cause and effect. I'm continuing to read. This would make it possible for Bilam's soul to reincarnate. Oh, I'm sorry, I skipped the sentence. The Ari says a bit that Bilam was then reincarnated into a stone, which could not speak, to give Bilam's soul the opportunity to begin the correction of his evil mouth. Of course, he could not achieve the correction while he was in the stone, but he could begin it. He could contemplate it. His soul could decide and realize how horrible evil speech is. This would make it possible for Bilam's soul to reincarnate as Nabal HaKarmeli. His incarnation as Nabal HaKarmeli was the first time since incarnating as a stone that Bilam's soul took human form as part of his process, as part of his process of correction. King David was not simply sending his soldiers to some random person. King David knew that Nabal had incarnated to correct the evil speech of Bilam. So he sent messengers to give Bilam, Nabal, a chance to purify his mouth. But unfortunately, Nabal still was unable to control his tongue. But what happened next? The Ari says that Nabal had a vision of his spiritual process in which everything was suddenly revealed to him. Nabal realized that he was the incarnation of Laban and Bilam. He also realized that because he had used his mouth negatively, he had been reincarnated into a stone, and that now, with the help of King David, he had been given a chance to correct his evil speech, but he had failed. He was so upset that he had missed this opportunity for his correction that his heart died within him. And as the Book of Prophets says, he made himself into a stone. When we look at this story literally, Nabal does not seem like a very good person. But when we take a step back, we begin to see the greatness of his soul. The Ari tells us he was a great soul in Laban, and also a great soul in Bilam. He was also a great soul while he was in the stone, and then Nabal. After falling spiritually by speaking negatively of King David, Naval realized what he had done and took the next step in his correction. Although Naval had not yet completed that correction, the Ari tells us that Naval died Moche Sharim, the death of the righteous, fulfilling the prophecy of Bilam. The Ari tells us that after Naval, the next incarnation of Bilam's soul was as Barzillai HaGiladi. As he was dying on his deathbed, King David told his son, King Solomon, "But show kindness to the sons of Barzillai HaGiladi, and let them be of those that eat at your table." Why? Why do we need to know this? Why was it written in the Book of Prophets? Barzillai HaGiladi had sustained King David and his soldiers when Naval had not. But this was not the ultimate reason. The Ari reveals that King David knew that Barzillai HaGiladi was actually the incarnation of the soul of Naval and of Laban and of Bilam, and that what his soul did not correct in its incarnation as Naval, it would continue to work on during its incarnation as Barzillai. Barzillai HaGiladi's death was also the death of the righteous, and by the time Bilam's soul was incarnated into Barzillai HaGiladi, he was completely corrected. My commentary on my own writing. I'm adding things in my commentary here that wasn't appropriate for the email, but still very appropriate for us in this class of reincarnation. The Torah tells us that King David married Saul's widow Abigail. Thinks she is the cause of his death. This is not the place to discuss it. An aggressive student will use the techniques described in the Sharei Gilgalim to determine what was her tikkun and how it related to King David. This technique is described in section 38 of Sharei Gilgalim. And in other places within the same writing, the same book. It's worth understanding the technique, and it's worth practicing the technique, because it will help you connect to your own reincarnation chain of souls. The technique is to take the letters of her name and relate them as an anagram to the names of the women in the Torah that came before her. When you do it for yourself, your name is in the Torah, and the people that you were is also in the Torah, but they're not as easily seen as these names that the Ari is teaching us about. They are more concealed. A nice wrapping to some simple stories from the Torah. Yet we learn from the stories documented by the student of the Ari, Rabbi Chaim Vital, that many times the Ari would tell him things about stones or grass or trees as they walked and talked around Tzfat. When Rabbi Chaim would check on the information related to him as to why that person needed to reincarnate into the inanimate object, he found that the Ari related information that was true, and which the Ari could have no way of knowing since he came from Egypt and only lived in Sfat a short time before he died. Thus we again learn that the tools of Kabbalah work at a level beyond logic and normal understanding, yet they work for those people willing to leave their ego and logic behind. And I will also comment that Rabbi Chaim was not questioning or doubting the Ari's statements. He was verifying it for his own certainty. It wasn't a question of doing it for doubt, but doing it so that his certainty would grow
in his teacher and in the information, and so that he could record it in his writings for us, and that we would have a way of elevating our sense of certainty. What can we learn from this new insight into the souls of Laban, Bilam, and Naval? We learn that there are no negative souls, only souls doing actions that need to be corrected, making tikkun. Each cycle of life gives each of us opportunities to grow into a righteous person. Each of us will eventually become righteous, just as the evil Laban, Bilam, Naval did so. This is a teaching of the Zohar and of the Talmud. My commentary. The name Laban, Bilam, Naval is hinting at the concept of the chain of souls. A complete chain of souls listing would be interesting, but not helpful, because when someone does not complete their tikkun in three lifetimes, they then split into six different people and start over. Each of those six has taken part of the tikkun at an easier level. Thus, there are only three in this chain of souls listing. Also, please note that the splitting into six sparks is what accounts for the increase in population of the world. We also learn that there is no difference between the soul of a Jewish person and the soul of a non-Jewish person. Each one will eventually become a Jew, either by choosing to convert or by coming into the Jewish life in order to achieve his correction. In other words, Bilam was not a Jew. He incarnated into Naval, was Jewish. We also learned that not all of the lost tribes need to convert to Judaism. Some will earn the merit to become Jewish in their next incarnation. Some will just become a spiritual person, and as a spiritual person inherit their birthright, the land of Israel. Remember, the land of Israel belongs to all 12 tribes, not just the tribes from the country called Judea, the Jews. Are there any questions before we start reading from the Chapter 5, Section 1 of the Sharei Gilgulim?
I'm not sure I know how to word it, but how do you reincarnate from a stone to the next level if that person is an inanimate object? I mean, we don't think of a stone as dying and then coming back in another generation.
Do you remember the story of Rabbi? Do you remember the story of Rabbi Akiva being told by Rachel that she would marry him, but only if he studied Torah? And his initial response was, "Of course, I'm 40 years old. How can I do that?" And he was so upset that he went and sat by a brook.
When the water hit the stone.
The water hit the stone, and what happened to the stone?
It broke.
It disappeared.
Oh, it disappeared.
It disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
It was worn down. A hole went through it.
So the energy could leave from the stone that way.
Exactly. Here's another way. A stone breaks down from the rain. A stone breaks down from somebody hitting it with an axe, and then that stone becomes nutrients in the earth. And those nutrients in the earth feed the grass, and the grass is eaten by animals. Each level, going from one lower world to the next higher world. There are teachings in the Kabbalah that certain months of the year, souls that are ready can go from one level to the next, but they cannot go to that level, to the next level, in other months of the year. I'm going by memory, and this may not be accurate, but I believe it's the first 4 months of the year, Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, and Tammuz, where stones go into grass, go into the vegetable kingdom. And the next 4 months, which is Av, Elul, Tishrei, and Cheshvan, that the vegetable kingdom can go into the animal kingdom. And the last 4 months, where the animal kingdom can go into the human kingdom. And we teach in Kabbalah that every Shabbat, the fish and the animals, the meat that is brought to a Shabbat table, even if it's not in those last 4 months of the year, that soul is being elevated by the human who's eating it on Shabbat. But the soul can't elevate to the human level. It cannot go further up. It's becoming an abur for the period of time that it needs to be in that human, and that it's going to assist that human and complete whatever mitzvah the human needs to do, or whatever mitzvah the tzaddik, the ibur needs to do in order to complete itself, complete its tikkun. All of this is information that will be taught within Sharei Gilgulim and is taught within the Parasha of Mishpatim in the Zohar. Are there any other questions? Those are excellent questions. Pacha.
Thank you. I could see the other levels. I just couldn't see the hard rock.
I understand. I understand that it's not just a rock. How about an atom in space? How is that going to get reincarnated? Why would a human soul be put into an atom in space? If somebody goes nonstop talking, the silence of space would be an excellent place to learn about that. Someone who cannot stop talking. They don't talk Lashon Hara, but they constantly make noise. They don't talk wisdom. This is a correction that needs to be done. How would that soul find its way back into the earth? Well, we studied in the science and Torah class how the science today thinks that the evaporation cycle is inadequate, that we must be getting water from outside of the Earth's atmosphere. And that atom could be picked up through gravity by a comet made of ice that would find its way into the atmosphere of Earth. There's no coincidence. All of these actions are done with planning, with as part of the plan of man, or the plan of God, and the assistance of the watchers. You begin to see how amazing the system is, and you begin to see how overwhelming and beautiful it is. My adjectives are not just, they're just not sufficient to express how much we need to truly learn and appreciate these things. Continuing to read. The Types of Reincarnation and Ibur, Chapter 5, Section 1. There are two types of Gilgulim and two types of Ibur. The first type of Gilgul occurs when a single nefesh enters the body of a person at the time of let me also say that the Ari's writings that I wrote in the email does relate very much to this section, because, well, as I would go through, perhaps I'll point it out to you. But the important thing to realize is that these aspects that the Ari is teaching are practical applications for our own benefit, to know ourselves and our own guilt rules. This is not just intellectual information. And what I'm teaching you is to apply it. And I hope you'll learn it from that perspective and not just accept it as information that's interesting. The first type of Gilgul occurs when a single nefesh enters the body of a person at the time of birth. The second type is also possible. Two nefeshes may reincarnate together, and this is also at the time of birth. This is called double Gilgul, and it was explained in the previous chapter and in other places. The Hebrew word is Gilgul Kaful. Both these nefeshot in Gilgul reincarnate and come into the world together when the person's body is born. They do not separate until death. They are called one nefesh, as one may suffer the pain and punishments that are inflicted on the body throughout its lifetime, as well as the pain of death. Nibur, however, does not occur at birth, as we have explained earlier. And there are two types also. The first occurs for the benefit of the righteous Tzaddik himself, who enters a person to complete himself with something that was missing to him, the Tzaddik. That's what I mentioned, that the Tzaddik that comes on a Shabbat table needs to borrow the body of that person he's assisting, perhaps to complete a particular mitzvah that he didn't do in his lifetimes. But he doesn't need to come back and go through childhood to achieve that. He can just come the month before that mitzvah will be done. And by participating, or even being in control of the body, because the nefeshot may say, go ahead, you need to do this, I'll share my body with you. The first occurs for the benefit of the righteous Tzaddik himself, who enters a person to complete himself with something that was missing to him. The second type is for the sake of the host person, to assist him with Torah and mitzvot. And I haven't really described that. How does that work? But somebody has difficulty with a particular action. Maybe it's wasting seed. Somebody has a lot of difficulty with wasting seed. So the Tzaddik comes and gives him that additional desire to receive, the desire to say no to the Satan. Thus, Gilgul takes place at the time of birth, and the two types are one nefesh reincarnates into a body, or two nefeshot reincarnate into the body, called the double Gilgul. The two types of Ibur are the soul of a righteous Tzaddik comes into a person because the Tzaddik himself is missing some tikkun. This Ibur is for the benefit of the Tzaddik. The Ibur is for the benefit of the host person is another possibility. The soul of the Tzaddik has only come to help him. Ibur does not take place at the time of birth, as the Rav will explain now. Then he will go on to further clarify some aspects of Ibur. This soul of the tzaddik enters and spreads throughout the entire body, just like the person's own nefesh. When he, the soul of the tzaddik, comes from his own sake, then he does not enter the person until he is 13 years old and one day. At that time, the host person becomes obligated in Torah and mitzvot. In this way, he, the tzaddik, can also rectify himself through this process, through this person, and that is why he does not enter before this time, only after the obligation of mitzvot has taken effect. At that time, the soul of the tzaddik enters and spreads throughout the entire body, just like the person's own nefesh. The two of them suffer all bodily pain together and equally. It remains there for a set time to rectify and complete that which it needs. Then it leaves while the person is still alive and returns to its place above in paradise. This completes the description here of the first type of ibur, where the soul of a tzaddik comes for its own benefit, to complete some tikkun that was missing to it. The Rav, which is Rabbi Chaim Vital calling his rabbi, Rabbi Isaac Luria, the Rav, has added here that since the soul of the tzaddik is coming for itself, even though it is coming as an ibur, it also suffers the pains of bodily existence. It gains the merits of the Torah and mitzvot performed while it resides in that body. It does not suffer the obligations of any sins that may be committed during its residence in the body, as we had learned previously. It only comes when the host is obligated to Torah and mitzvot, and it leaves when it has finished with its own tikkun. My commentary. What is being hinted to here is a length of time that the tzaddik soul needs to remain in the physical world. Why this must be, I am not sure. Actually, I am. I described it to you beforehand, but I didn't want to take the time to explain it in here, but I decided to go ahead with it, primarily because I wasn't sure and I didn't have the time to research which were the months. Yet there are many stories of a soul that came to be born to a couple who could not have children. Then after many years, the child is born and leaves at a young age. Many times the tzaddik, teacher, rav for that couple, tells them that this soul came for a few years on earth and that they were chosen to be the parents due to their merit. The second type of ibur comes in order to help the host perform Torah and mitzvot. In the second type of ibur discussed now, the soul of the tzaddik comes for the benefit of the host and does also not arrive until the age of 13 years and a day. It comes in order to help the host perform Torah and mitzvot. 13 years and a day is a time when the assistance becomes useful. I should also mention that for a girl, it's 12 years and a day. And people always ask, well, why is a girl becoming obligated to the mitzvot at 12 years and a boy at 13? And the typical answer, which is a physical answer, is that girls develop faster. But the real answer is 12 years and a day is the 13th year. 13 years and a day is the 13th year. This difference of a year is the difference between being connected to Bina and the boy not being connected to Bina. when the soul of the Sadiq comes for the sake of the person and not for himself, then it comes of its own volition and not by coercion. Therefore, it is not forced to suffer any bodily pain at all, and it does not feel whatsoever the sufferings or afflictions that come upon the host's body. Furthermore, if he is pleased with the host person, then he remains. If not, then he leaves him, as it says, "Leave the tents of these evil people." A verse from the Torah. Commentary was by Shabtai Teicher. That is the end of section 1 of chapter 5. Are there any questions? Chapter 5, section 2, Four Souls, One Person. This is a short section, so I will continue, even though we only have a few minutes. The Rav will now continue with the discussion of the phenomena of more than one nefesh in one body. We will now further clarify the subject that we began previously. The verse says, "Visit the sins of the fathers on the children for 3 and 4 generations." This is a verse that's within the Eser Dibrot itself. This means that up to 3 reincarnating nefeshot can reincarnate with a new nefesh together in one body at birth. This makes for a total of 4 nefeshot at one time. This is the secret of 4. 3 have reincarnated from previous incarnations, and 1 is a new nefesh. The verse reads, "Visit the sins of the father on the children for 3 and 4 generations." The esoteric meaning of the word 4 is that it sets the maximum limit on the number of souls that can inhabit a single body at one time. Of these 4, 3 have reincarnated from previous reincarnations, and 1 is a new nefesh that has not been in a body beforehand. It is also the secret of the verse, 2 or 3 times with a man, a verse from Job. 3 nefeshot are able to reincarnate with 1 man, who is this new nefesh. However, it is not possible for more than this to reincarnate at one time. However, less than this amount is possible. It is possible that 1 nefesh can reincarnate alone in a body, or 1 reincarnated nefesh with a new nefesh, or 2 reincarnated nefeshot by themselves can go into 1 body, or 2 reincarnated nefeshot with a new one, or 3 reincarnated nefeshot by themselves, or 3 reincarnated souls with a new one. However, more than this is not possible within 1 body. Those that are reincarnating together in a single body must all be of a single root. Know that those that are reincarnating together in a single body must all be of a single root. This is the esoteric meaning of the verse, "He shall redeem the property of his brother." Most people think that that just applies to the Levirate marriage, but it actually is much more broad, and it's a hint to us, a teaching to us, to not limit your understanding of the Torah verses to just one specific explanation. In other words, for one soul to redeem or help another, it must be his brother, so to speak. They must be related to each other through their roots, as we have learned already in Chapter 3, Section 2. Souls come from different parts of Adam's spiritual body, and each particular location is a specific root from which a particular group of souls originates. This results in a resonance or connection between some souls, which does not exist between souls from different roots. As a result, even though the first time Gilgul has not committed any of the sins of the previous Gilgulim, he will still have to cleanse the blemish and stench that resulted from their earlier sins. This will be the case if he is from a more internal, more primary level than the others, such as the sinews of Adam HaRishon, as opposed to the flesh, which is more external. I'm going to go on to read and explain that, but I had a thought as I was reading this that I thought I might want to say, so please give me a minute while I reconnect to that thought. Oh, the thought is this. I have told you previously in other classes that there's 365 sinews and 248 parts of the body and the soul. So how is it possible that there's a limit of four? Why couldn't there be 248 parts of nefeshot that would be part of the within the body at any given moment in time, or any reincarnation? Why is there the limit to the four? And I'm going to just answer that by saying, why is there four letters in the Tetragrammaton? Why are there the Hebrew roots tend to be three and four letters at most? Some people will say, but there are two-letter roots. But one linguist once told me, all two-letter roots are coming from the Aramaic. The physical and spiritual body consists of four aspects. They are listed here in order from the internal to the external, from the higher to the lower, from the primary to the secondary. The bones with the brain marrow that is within them. The sinews, the flesh, and the skin. Concerning this is the verse, you have dressed me with the skin and flesh, and with bones and sinews you have covered me. The Rav is using as an example the two middle aspects of the body, the sinews and the flesh. The sinews are more internal and primary than the flesh. The idea of the sinews are the ligaments and the veins and arteries. They're more internal than the flesh, the meat of the body. The new soul will be responsible for the well-being of the entire group soul. In the example, the new soul comes from the aspect of the sinews, whereas the others that have reincarnated with him come from the exterior aspect of flesh. The new soul, although it has not shared in any of the sins of the others, will be responsible for the well-being of the entire group soul that has reincarnated together with him. He is responsible because he is from a more primary aspect than they are, and he has the ability to rejuvenate them. What is internal is higher spiritually to what is external. This is a teaching of the spiritual worlds. This is in order to draw life to the entire root. One of the consequences of sin and repeated blemish is that one of the limbs of the spiritual body that has been affected by the sin may become atrophied. The holiness and life force may be removed from the limb in order that the other limbs do not become blemished as a result of the sin. Rectification of the sin, therefore, allows life and energy to return to the limb and rejuvenates it. In the case discussed here, this benefits the entire group of souls of the particular root that has reincarnated together. Before I read this commentary, which is the last paragraph in this section, I'd like to also comment that this is hinting to the idea of the Yud-Kaf-Shin sequence being able to take body parts that have become atrophied, that have become sick, that have become limited, and take them back to their stem cell state. And why the stem cell state works and becomes all of the different levels of the various organs. My commentary, why does the list of levels of body parts, skin and sinews, etc., not include anything but bones? Why does it not say a heart or lungs, etc.? This is because all the four levels come from the same body part. This means if the body part is the spleen, as an example, the bone that supports the spleen is the level listed. The sinew that supports the spleen to the bone is listed. The flesh around the spleen, including the fat cells, etc., and the skin that is outside on the body above the spleen. This is just an example. The commentary, again, was by Shabtai Teicher. We will come back next week to start with Chapter 5, Section 3. And as I said, we may find ourselves going to three or even four classes for this particular handout. Are there any questions? I'm reminding you of the classes coming up. Thursday at 10 p.m. is a very important Zohar class. Saturday at 10 p.m. is also a Zohar class. Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. is the preparation for the three-week period that starts next Tuesday night. It's very important to either attend that class or to listen to the recording. Please, if you're not receiving copies of the recordings, send me an email and request them so that you can receive this recording, because the 3 weeks period is a very difficult 3 weeks. It's a very difficult period, and it needs to be handled, and actions, spiritual actions, need to be taken to help you go through this period and keep yourself in balance. Next Monday morning at 5 a.m. will be the fourth class of the Sefer Yetziras, of course. Next Monday at 5:30 p.m. will be the third class of the basic class in Sacramento. And next Monday at 8:30 p.m. will be the fourth class of the four phases from the San Francisco area. And next Tuesday night, we will again have the 16th class of our Advanced Reincarnation. And next Wednesday is a fast day, but we'll be discussing that on Sunday morning. Are there any questions? Have a beautiful, beautiful week.
Okay.
Shalom, you all.
Thank you.
Shalom.
Shalom.
Shalom. Speak with you in the morning.
I'm sorry, what was the last comment? I didn't hear.
I said I'll speak with you in the morning.
Very good.